This is the Generations Radio broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm executive director for Christian Home Educators out here in Colorado, but also a pastor and a father. And we're trying to read the world through the eyeglasses of a biblical worldview on this program. We address all sorts of issues from science to politics, economics, art and culture. Today we want to talk about music and entertainment, my friends. It's the warp and woof of life. We love music in our home. And folks, let's put one myth to bed right away. It's not wrong to sing about stuff. That's right. It's not wrong to sing about life, the real things of life, work, love, fathers, mothers, war, death, loneliness, crime, gunfights, babies, weddings, murder, driving trucks, wine, beagles, sunsets, beaches, and trees. It's not wrong to sing about these things. And Dave Buhner, also in studio with me, another father of five. And Dave, one of my beefs about Christian music is I think a lot of Christians have this impression that if you're not singing about Jesus or the crucifixion or the atonement or, you know, a list of five things, then you're not singing Christian music. I want to put that to bed right away, that we can sing about this created order. God created beagles. Write a song about one. I can't think of one, but somebody needs to write a song about a beagle.
A beagle song.
Yeah, a beagle song.
Elvis did nothing but a hound dog. Does that count?
Now it's close. Okay, ladies and gentlemen. But let's be careful. The average kid's worldview, I'd say the average kid out there, his worldview is set way more by Hollywood and Nashville than by the public schools. 95%, I mean, it's 95% of kids, Christian kids out there, are getting their worldview, their life, their attitudes, their perspectives set by Hollywood and Nashville, not by the public schools. Oh, 5% of the kids attending public schools will get the worldview, the naturalistic, materialistic worldview they're taught in the public schools because they took their schooling seriously. So about 5% will become university professors, and they'll become hardcore naturalist materialists because they were carefully indoctrinated in public schools. But 95% of kids are going to be influenced by their peers and by Nashville and HBO and Hollywood. Because that's who they listen to. These are their shepherds. These who are the ones who guide them in the modern world and frame their attitudes, their perspectives, and lifestyles. So here's what we're going to do today. We're going to survey popular music, look at the pop charts and the country western charts, and figure out what's the most popular music in the nation and sort of analyze them as best as we can. Then we're going to take a broader look at popular music in the next section of the program. First of all, hey, the top 40 charts, number one in the nation today is still Katy Perry's "The Lesbian Girls" song. And of course, this is the pastor's kid from Santa Barbara teaching girls how to engage in lesbian activity. All right, so that's number one, lesbian music, number one in the nation right now, 10 weeks. Number one on the top 40 charts. All right, now number two song in the nation is "Take a Bow." Can't remember who sang it. Some woman who sings it. It's a breaking up song. It's a breaking up song. "Take your clothes and get out of here, and don't let the sprinklers hit you on the way out." And of course, the assumption is shacking up, fornication, done with you. On to the next one. All right, so that's number two in the nation. Number three is a song called "Lollipop." It's X-rated, by the way. Foul, degrading, fornicating, loveless, animal, eros. It's pretty much what number three song in the nation is. Number four, a song called "Forever" by some guy named Chris Brown. It's a love song of sorts. We only got one night together, so let's make the most of it. Again, it's sort of the one-night stand deal where two dogs get together and spend the night together. So that's the number four song in the nation. Number five song in the nation is a song called "Bleeding Love." It's a little more honest. This woman is living a life of loneliness. She's figured out she's been the vagabond in the city. She has been broken up. Her heart's been broken a number of times, and she's not sure she wants it broken again, but she's willing to break another heart. Because that's the kind of lifestyle that she lives. All right, ladies and gentlemen, top 40 songs, top five songs in the nation are basically raw, lonely, X-rated, fornicating, hard-edged, mean, unloving, lesbianism. All right, that's pretty much what happens on the top 40 popular charts. Now, if you look at the, and by the way, 98% of pop music is just pure unadulterated trash. I just wouldn't recommend it. Dave, I haven't listened to any of these songs. I haven't even heard them, you know, on radio stations. I haven't been interested in popular music since in the early 1980s. The top 40 charts represent the sort of lifestyle that does not accord with what I do.
Yeah, you may say unadulterated trash, but you can't use the word unadulterated with adultery, which is what the top 40 charts are.
Oh,
basically, it's about adultery, so it's adulterated trash.
Lesbianism, fornication, one-night stands. That's pretty much top 40 stuff. All right, now country music is a mix between pop and folk. Now, we distinguish between pop and folk on this program, folk being a legitimate music form that honors the values of fathers and grandfathers, yet country music is a mix of pop and folk. They include some of the popular ideas where we reject the values of our fathers and grandfathers and live the city life where we abandon relationships, we abandon any form of accountability, and we live the fornicating one-night stand lifestyle. Now, that sort of approach to country music took place in the 1960s, 1970s. A song by Leroy Van Dyke in the 1960s came out called Walk On By, a song about cheating, about adultery, and that began a new form of country music in the 60s and 70s. Well, the number one song in the nation right now is a song by Montgomery Lewis, a song called Back When I Knew It. And this is an interesting mix. Listen to these lyrics. At the ripe old age of 19, I bought a short bid pickup chick's machine. Life ran on beer and gasoline, a half a lap behind the law. I had a fake ID that got me into toughies. Love was a word I used to get lucky, etc., etc. Back when the world was flat and mama and daddy didn't have a clue that was back. Back when a pitcher of beer and a couple of shots made me bulletproof. Back when God was a name I used in vain to get a point across when I got ticked off. Lord, I'm learning so much more than back when I knew it all. I found out credit cards don't mean you're rich and beer and gasoline don't mix. Yeah, stepside trucks can't jump a ditch and those big house rooms sure are small. Learn that love is a woman that will settle you down. A Sunday sermon can turn life around. Man, I can't believe all the answers I found since back when I knew it all. Dave, that's a pretty classic country approach, looking at life from both sides, looking at it from the side of a rebellious teen, and yet you've got a theme of repentance working in the song.
Well, you said, it's been said if you run a country song backwards, you know, the guy gets his truck back, he gets out of jail, and he finds his dog, and his wife returns. I think that is pretty typical of country music. They like to go to both extremes, and yet they glorify both ends. That seems to be a common theme, is that they glorify the white lightning running, the going to jail, the rowdy getting drunk lifestyle, and yet they repent of it.
Yeah.
It seems like it was okay for an age.
I think it was Kenny Chesney that says country music is the only form of music where you get laid and get saved in the same song. So pretty much summarizes what country music does. Number two song for the country charts, Blake Shelton's Home, the typical I'm tired of the big city stardom, I just want to go home and be with you sort of song. Number three song, Kenny Chesney's Better as a Memory. And this again, is classic country and of the modern flavor. It's absent of a lot of folk. I'm better as a memory than your man, is what he says in the song. I'm basically a scumbag, and I'm going to stay that way. It's just giving you the heads up here. It's in the vein of Dang Me by Roger Miller, and we're going to talk about that in the next section. Number four song in the nation is Good Time by Alan Jackson, and this is the kind of music where the guy's a party animal. He's been working all week. He's going to have a good time tonight. He's going to listen to Hank Thompson's Honky Tonkin' on steroids. He's drinking all night, girls on his lap, Waffle House at 5 a.m. It's a citified blue-collar partying bad boy, sort of like what Hank Williams Jr. was doing back in the 1970s and 1980s. Number five song on the country charts is Carrie Underwood's Last Name. And I heard this one at Walmart the other day, and I was just shocked by this thing. This is how far country music has gone. Carrie Underwood starts out at a party, messing around, drinking too much. She's a loose girl. And you know what happens the next morning? She wakes up, doesn't know his name, and now they're married in Vegas, and she doesn't even know her own last name. That's pretty much the way that one goes. goes. Ladies and gentlemen, this is classic postmodern floozy, flaky relationships, vagabonds living the anonymous city life. Everybody's fornicating and nobody knows anybody's name anymore. And that's pretty much modern pop, modern country music.
Well, I think country music is pretty honest in this. It proclaims the life of the prodigal son and is honest enough to say that at some point it gets really, really bad.
And occasionally, the prodigal son gets saved. All right, ladies and gentlemen, in just a moment, we want to talk about music. Should you be listening to this country music? Should you be listening to the pop charts? Should Christians listen to top 40 music? Be back in just a moment. My name's Kevin Swanson. Folks, one of the passions we have on this radio program is to see a Malachi 4 revival in the hearts of fathers and sons across America. I believe this is the catalyst to the restoration of faith, family, and freedom in the 21st century. And that's why we are sponsoring our fourth father-son retreat in Colorado on August 9th through the 12th. This year, again, that's August 9th through the 12th. And folks, we have selected the most inspiring, visionary speakers we can find for this father-son retreat. Doug Phillips, Richard Little Bear Wheeler, and Jeff Botkin will be there. And you will enjoy inspiring talks, father-son Olympics, hiking, swimming, sports, and most importantly, time away with your son in the Colorado mountains. The event takes place at one of the very best mountain resorts in Colorado, the Crooked Creek Ranch, nestled in a stunning mountain range near Fraser. Please register today at check.org on the web for this once-in-a-lifetime experience for you and your son. That's check.org on the web, C-H-E-C.org, or call 877-842-2432. That's 877-842-2432 to be a part of the Father-Son Retreat. Welcome back to Generations. This is Kevin Swanson talking about music today on this edition of Generations. Should you listen to top 40 chart music? Should you listen to country music where you're talking about honky-tonking, drinking all night, partying down, waking up with somebody you don't even know? Ladies and gentlemen, should you listen to this sort of stuff? And Dave, I think what you get with most popular music today and most country music today is a chronicling of the children of hell. That is, those that are on their way to hell and they're out there telling us about what it's like. And it's not obviously entirely inappropriate to listen to somebody, some unbeliever, telling you about his life. You have examples in literature, in Christian literature, about, you know, such as John Bunyan's Pilgrim's Progress, where he interviews, effectively, a man who's on his way to hell in an iron cage. You have John Milton, other Christian writers have done this in history as well, where they will actually interview these guys, find out what it's like to be in an iron cage on your way to hell. And I think Roger Miller's Dang Me is an excellent example of this, where he is a man who is living the life of the irresponsible, sinful lout, and he's happy to be that way. He's not going to change. Listen to these lyrics. And again, this is the number one song back in the 1960s. Well, here I sit getting ideas. Ain't nothing but a fool would live like this. Out all night running wild. Woman sitting home with a month-old child. So dang me, they ought to take a rope and hang me. High from the highest tree, woman, won't you wait for me? Just sitting around drinking with the rest of the guys. Six rounds bought, I bought five. Spent the groceries, half the rent, like $14.27. So dang me. Now, Dave, you know guys like this, don't you? I mean, just wretches, louts. And typically their neighbors, their church member, their church brothers and sisters have to help out with the women and the orphans, effectively the orphans, that are having to deal with these entirely irresponsible men. And it's just a horrific situation. And this guy is the culprit here. He is the sinful, wicked wretch. And he's singing about it. Now, I'm not sure I enjoy listening to a song like that. I mean, you know, effectively what the guy's saying is, I'm an irresponsible lout, so may God damn me. Now, you know, that's pretty honest, you have to say. I mean, the guy is being honest, but I'm not sure I can enjoy his honesty.
Well, you would think that it would stand out as a pretty strong apologetic to the unchristian world that this is what a non-Christian life would look like. Unfortunately, there's not a strong contrast. In other words, the thesis and the antithesis aren't drawn real close. Now, I think that most of that denies a metaphysic. It's sort of a wink, there might be a hell. I think of the Grateful Dead singing, we're all going to hell in a handbasket, so we might as well enjoy the ride. So if there is no hope, and if there is no reason to live righteously, hey, I might as well just have as much fun on the way to wherever I'm going as I can. Blood, Sweat, and Tears, very famous. I know there ain't no heaven. In other words, life is too miserable for there to be heaven, and I pray there ain't no hell. So I just hope that whatever I'm doing doesn't come back and bite me too bad.
So again, as Christians listen to this music, what is their attitude? What is their perspective? Do they actually appreciate listening to the music? Do you actually love listening to somebody going to hell? Now, I think it is interesting, and sometimes it can be very confirming of your faith. Because, you know, we're not going to hell, so we're sitting here listening to this guy who's going to hell, and we're thinking, well, now, that's interesting. There are people out there, evidently, who are going to hell, and there are those who aren't going to hell. That's why a John Milton or a John Bunyan are appropriate, right? It is appropriate sometimes to take a look at those people and listen to the testimonies of those who are on their way to hell, and then you say, but for the grace of God, there would I go. But you turn back and you say, thanks be to God, there is a Christ who died for my sins and is risen from the dead, and I have confidence that one day I will be with him to live forever and ever with him in eternal life in heaven.
Well, you know, it's curious to me because when I was growing up, there was a song called Fire, which was supposed to chronicle the suffering and misery of hell. And it was a very popular song, and it started out with this demonic voice saying, I am the God of hellfire, and I'm here to bring fire and burn. And you got to burn, you're going to burn, you're going to burn. Yeah, that was a very popular song. Why would people want to listen to misery? Why would people want to listen to, while at the same time denying hell, would they want to listen to the torments of hell?
Dave, I think they are impressed with the courage and the audacity of those who are going to hell, and they're proud of it. See, I think there is something about somebody who is willing to sing with pride and with an audacity and with a courage in the face of God and say, I am going to hell and I'm proud of it and there's nothing you can do about it, God or anybody else. I think there are people watching that and saying, that's really impressive. And they're impressed by that. So this is one of the dangers contained in listening to some of this pop music is these are people really going to hell and they're proud of it. So at the point where somebody, one of these Christian kids who sits there listening to this music day in and day out, begins to be impressed by that and begins to take on that attitude and that perspective is the point at which I think you've got somebody who's being shepherded right down the path to hell itself.
So it's one thing to say this stands as a contrast. This is a condition to be avoided. This is misery. The blues are pretty good at that. But it becomes a whole other thing when that misery becomes virtue. And this is something to be sought after. Or in order for me to fit in with all the other losers, I got to become as big a loser as them. And I think that's what music has a tendency to do, at least pop music, when you have a steady diet of it.
That's right. And I think that's the point, Dave. We're saying it's not wrong to listen to the testimony of somebody going to hell from time to time. But be very careful that you don't take on their attitudes, their perspectives, their hatred of God on the way to hell. All right, ladies and gentlemen, well, we want to take one more issue up before we're done with this program, and that is the breaking up songs, the lost love songs. And you get this in pop music and country music. I'd say 25 to 30% of pop and country music seems to focus on lost love. Now, as it turns out, the kind of lost love you're dealing with today in songs that are written today as opposed to those written 30 to 40 years ago is that today it doesn't hurt as much. Now people have pretty much consigned themselves to a life of divorce and breaking up and these dating relationships that last for a day and a half or a week and a half. So people have been, their hearts have been broken so many times they don't feel anymore and they don't really, I don't, the breaking up songs aren't, are more violent and more loveless than they used to be. Nevertheless, as we listen to these breaking up songs, again, making up 25 to 30% of the music that is out there, I would say that guys like us have a hard time relating to this. Why? Because what is happening here is the presentation of a cultural context that is not my cultural context. What they're talking about is a dating culture where these young men and young women are lost in a city. They have no covenantally accountable relationships with moms and dads, and and they're just gambling their emotions and their chastity on the next flaky loser that comes down the pike. These girls don't have fathers to look after them. I mean, this number five song in the nation on the country charts by Underwood is, you know, a last name. She doesn't even know her own last name after she marries this guy. Obviously, she has nobody in her life who cares a whit about what happens to her. And, Dave, this is the bar scene. This is the dating culture. This is the high school dating culture where moms and dads could care less what happens to their young men and young women. And yet this is not my life. This is somebody else's life. This is a different social context. It's not my social context. How can I enjoy social context? How can I enjoy music where the floozies and the flakes are hanging out in a bar? That's like me trying to enjoy music about homosexuals loving each other. It's just not my social context. All right? Now, if I listen to this kind of music, though, nonstop for the next 3 years, my guess is that will become my social context. And Dave, I think that's what happens to these kids in high schools that listen to these top 40 charts songs, and over time, they really live the floozy, flaky lifestyle because they've been listening to the music that represents that floozy, flaky social lifestyle.
It becomes an expectation to life. Now, for my entire lifetime, there's always been breaking up songs. Probably the most famous, of course, is Neil Sedaka's Breaking Up Is Hard to Do. Now, that had a really light, almost cheerful melody.
Yeah, I remember it.
You wouldn't want to try and sing it, at least not unless you're a soprano, but Neil did. And later on, we had Paul Simon doing 50,000 Ways or 5,000 Ways or how many ever thousand ways there was to leave his lover. Yeah. You know, just drop off the key, Lee. Yeah. Hey, Gus, don't exactly. Need to discuss much. Just hop on the bus.
Hey, we've been doing these relationships for the last 40 years. We've been a bunch of flakes and floozies out of covenant. Our hearts have broken so many times, we wouldn't know how to love if you know, somebody gave us the manual on it.
And here's part of the point. If that's the steady diet, and now people like Neil Sedaka, who's considered, you know, pretty clean cut by musician standards, and Paul Simon, who's considered very clean cut by musician standards, at least by modern musician standards, if the clean cut guys are saying, go ahead and have these serial relationships and just go ahead and leave on and on, what do you think you're getting from the less than clean cut musicians?
Yeah, as in everybody making music today. Well, folks, again, lost love is not all illegitimate. In fact, there's been some legitimate lost love songs that are wonderful, that hit the heartstrings and do a good job with that. Remember Danny Boy? Danny Boy's a lost love song where Danny's going off to war and she's not going to see him maybe ever, and that pulls on our heartstrings, and that's actually a good theme that I think Christians can sing about. Roger Whittaker's song "The Last for a Farewell" is a powerful, powerful song about somebody having to go to war during, I think it was World War II when that song was written. There's some wonderful poetry, some powerful poetry dealing with lost love that I think Christians can sing and Christians can appreciate. But again, the bar scene where you've broken up 40 times and who cares about the next breakup, ladies and gentlemen, that's not our social context. That's not what God wants for our social context. And I think we can salvage some good folk music. It's not wrong, my friends, to sing about work. It's not wrong to sing about love, fathers, mothers, war, death, loneliness, crime, gunfights, babies, weddings, murder, driving trucks, wine, sunsets, beaches, trees, and beagles. Ladies and gentlemen, it's not wrong to sing about these things, but let's establish the right social context. So, folks, again, we're not saying that Christians should not listen to good music about themes like these, but beware, be careful, be careful. Are you being sucked into the wrong social context? Are you getting the wrong worldview? Are you beginning to ride with these people in the basket to hell itself? Or are you listening to good edifying music and balance it out? You know, it's not inappropriate to listen to and to watch and to read certain accounts of those that are not on their way to heaven, but are on their way to hell. But, boy, you've got to make sure that you're on your way to heaven and you're watching this from the other side. Well, folks, again, we listen to some music, and so we try to find some folk music that's edifying. One of our favorite albums is Marty Robbins' Gunfighter Ballads, Big Iron, where the ranger gets the bad guy in the western town, Cool Water, where they're praying to God for water out in the desert, dealing again with the real things of life, the pain and agony of going without water, and yet the gift of water that God gives. Utah Carol, a song on that album where a ranch hand gives his life to save a little girl from a herd of cattle. Master's Call, a classic, classic folk song, including the salvation of a rebellious son who repents of his sin, turns to Christ in the middle of a lightning storm and a cattle stampede. And again, even on that album, a couple of songs, a little dark-edged. The most popular song on that album was El Paso, where a man gives up his life for the sake of a Proverbs 7 woman, a bad woman. So you get a view of the real things of life when you listen to ballads, when you listen to folk music, when you listen to songs about love, about work, about fathers, mothers, war, death, etc. But be sure you're listening to it through critical ears, and you are filtering it through a biblical worldview, a biblical view of social contexts, a biblical view of ethics, a biblical view of metaphysics and reality. Is God a factor on these albums? Is God a reality in these people's lives? Those are the important questions as you analyze music, movies, well, just about everything. Ladies and gentlemen, you have been listening to Generations, and we look at the world through the eyes of a biblical worldview on this program. If you find the program helpful, you might like to be a sponsor of this radio program. We are now at 40 sponsors, on our way to 120. If you'd like to be a sponsor on this radio program and keep this message concerning a biblical worldview on the air, then please call right now and sponsor the program with $10 a month or $20 a month or $50 a month. Just call 877-842-2432. Again, that's 877-842-2432 to sponsor this radio program today. And you can interact with the program by emailing me at host@kevinswanson.com, and you can hear the program anytime, anywhere in the world, at kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we cast a vision for the next generation.